CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.
Angela Richard will be telling us a little bit about FAIR. So what can you tell me about FAIR?
Well, it's an acronym that stands for Families for Accountability, Inclusion, and Reform. And we are basically a grassroots, I wouldn't even call us an organization, a group. And we are comprised of parents across the province of Ontario who have intellectually disabled children, for the most part, adult children living in group homes. And we came together because we're facing many, many issues.
So what sorts of issues and challenges do you want the public to know about that these family members of yours are going through?
Well, as our name states, there is a huge lack of accountability. So the group homes that we deal with are funded by the ministry, MCCSS, Ministry for Children, Community Social Services. And they basically take a very hands-off approach with the agencies that operate the group homes. And so families that have issues have very little recourse. So some of the, you know, besides the accountability part, a lot of families are dealing with what they label, the agencies label, communication and visitation protocols. And these protocols dictate, put restrictions upon the parent when they can visit their child in their child's home. Excuse me, I'm just getting over a cold. They will dictate things, for instance, like the parent has to give 48 hours before they can go and visit their child. The parent must give 2 weeks notice before they can take the child home for an overnight visit. The parent cannot speak or communicate with frontline staff. And in many, many instances of these protocols, it seems that the individuals in the group home, the adult children, are nonverbal. So in essence, what these agencies are doing is taking away their voices because the two parties that know that individual best are not allowed to communicate with one another.
So,
So
I'm curious, what sorts of avenues are you exploring to push for reform and to push for better equality and better regulation?
Well, we are going public with many of our stories. We have held a press conference at Queen's Park in Toronto this past May. We have a policy brief that has been delivered to MPPs across the province, and the policy brief outlines the issues and what our solutions are, what our suggestions are, what reform is needed. We continue to share our stories. So on the FAIR platform, we have a Facebook page, and we share stories anonymously for families because many, many families are afraid of retaliation for speaking up. I just saw a post from last night. Somebody responded and said, you know, this was happening. Money was taken from her sister's account, and the agency apologized for the error and said that it would be reimbursed, and it wasn't, and management changed, and she has no recourse, and she's afraid to speak up because she can no longer care for her adult sister on her own. And that's what happens with so many families, that they have no alternative because they can no longer care for their child's needs, their siblings' needs, all on their own. So their only alternative is to have them placed in a group home. And that being said, we are considered the lucky ones because there are currently 50,000 plus people on a wait list for any sort of developmental services in Ontario.
So what would the ideal outcome be if you could see anything added to the current infrastructure in terms of support? What would you like to see in place?
Well, personally, my biggest reform would be that the government allows families to receive their child's funding as a direct source, as opposed to it being funneled through transfer payment agencies. There are many, from childhood, there are many forms of funding that we get from the government that are direct funded, and we have to be completely accountable for all of it, account for every cent. But if we were in charge of our children's funding for this, then we would be able to help them choose where they live. We would be able to help them choose who they live with, and we would be able to help them choose who provides care for them. Currently, the way our system works, and it is a very, very broken system, is individuals are put into homes with people that they're, how will I say this, I guess of differing needs, differing interests and capabilities, and they're not a good fit. They're not a good fit to live together, and it causes individuals to not live their best lives, and things could be so much better. And I guess, I mean, I touched on one instance. We have families who have been trespassed from their children's homes for speaking up. We have, I mentioned, you know, financial errors. We see a lot of that happening, and nobody is holding these agencies accountable. There are contracts between families and agencies, and if the agency doesn't live up to their contract, the only recourse that a family has is to end up in civil court, which costs money because the government, the ministry, will not enforce these contracts. They say that's between you and them, and that's got nothing to do with us. But they continue to fund the agencies. I've gone so far as to submit an FOI request, Freedom of Information request, to the ministry, and received a whole pile of documentation outlining the funding agreement that the agency submitted to the ministry in order to attain funding to provide supports for my daughter. And that is a contract between the ministry and the agency, and I'm currently attempting to hold the ministry accountable because the agency has not lived up to that contract. That is not between me and the agency. That is between the ministry and the agency, and the agency has fallen short by a long shot.
So have you seen any positive traction being taken? Is there anything being done in the right direction?
No. the ministry put a reform plan together. My goodness, how many years has it been now? I don't want to misquote, but I'm thinking it was around 2019, I think. that they announced Journey to Belonging, and we have an inside joke. We call it the Journey to Nowhere, because we haven't seen any of the steps happen in the chronological order that they were described they would happen. And we are promised that down the road we're going to get individualized or direct funding, but we're very afraid that that's not going to happen because the steps that need to be implemented in order for that to happen aren't happening. So no, we don't see anything really promising happening. We feel like a lot of, and this isn't to say that all agencies are like this. There are some really, really awesome agencies out there. And we hear from parents all the time that are very happy, very involved with their children's lives. But there is no oversight mechanism in place right now, an independent oversight body that makes sure that these agencies are doing what they should be doing and holding true to what their objectives and purpose is. They seem to forget what they're there for, and that is to serve the individuals with disabilities and make sure that they are living their best lives. And that's not happening in a lot of cases.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure. Thanks, Cam.
My pleasure. In this segment of our show, Archie Allison will be giving us an update on Variety Village. So what's the latest with Variety Village?
There's a lot happening right now with the Paralympic Games happening in Italy. We launched Sobeys Feed the Dream 2026 campaign. So last Saturday we introduced roller sledge hockey, indoor floor curling. We had a photo booth, giveaways, but most importantly a live broadcast of the games for our members and guests to watch the games and cheer on Team Canada.
So how do these Paralympics compare to previous years, in your opinion?
I think for Variety Village, we're a feeder to athletes' interests and pursuits. So I think for us, it's as we're learning more about the Paralympic Games winter and summer, more and more people are getting exposed to the different media platforms that are promoting it. So we're getting a lot of interest from the community around participation, around celebrating the athletes and being part of the team in the future, if that's the aspiration at a competitive level. So I think the awareness piece has really kind of changed the ball to learn more about opportunities for people of all abilities to compete at a higher level in sport, or even to cheer on or coach or volunteer at.
So in your own work, what sorts of sporting opportunities have proven most commonly requested in recent memory?
Great question, Cam. I think interest in sport kind of varies from person to person. There's a lot of interest around individual sports versus team sports, recreational versus competitive, seasonal, winter to summer. And I think a chance for people to learn more about what's out there are through those awareness opportunities and triad days, and even just connecting with community groups, organizations, or Paralympic, Special Olympic, or other athletes that have competed in international venues. It really provides like a training ground for people to kind of follow through and think, this is maybe something I'd like to pursue. So I think with Variety Village, because we have 9 different sport teams and almost 200 programs, I think there's so many opportunities to build a pathway to your interests, being multi-sport, being sport-specific, or recreational or competitive.
So previous years, it's been said that the Olympics kind of overshadow the Paralympics. Do you find that in the Paralympic Games, these athletes still put on high-performance athletic show and still put in the training and the time and the energy that an Olympic athlete would?
That's a great question. I think a Paralympic athletes for me is always my focus because of where we are and what we do and how we create pathways to compete at that level. So for me, I tend to watch more Paralympic sport activities than the Olympics. I think being kind of parallel games 2 weeks apart, similar venues, and hopefully a growth in more broadcast media awareness, I think they're very comparable in terms of the status and the recognition that way. But always Paralympic athletes could use more awareness and media to bring attention to the outstanding performances each athlete has.
So, in general, what are some of the benefits of being involved in sport with a disability, aside from just the sense of community?
I think it's always a great opportunity for any individual that receives a diagnosis, has an injury, a progressive condition, and everyone else, just to try sport. I think often sport gets grouped in with, if you're not successful at the first time, then it's kind of a one and done. I think with sport, it's a vehicle to create kind of self-interest around your health and fitness, to create a network of friends, resources, and then just to build the opportunities for your own confidence, for your own self-esteem, for your own experiences, to be part of something that you enjoy. But I think sport, given that there's so many opportunities and so many different sports to try, I think it's important that people celebrate kind of sport and get involved and active in things they like to do.
So, has there been any recent success moment or story with Variety you'd like to share?
Yeah, I think every day it's kind of funny because I'm fortunate to work in an organization that our priority is promoting access, awareness, and adapted physical activity. So every day I notice people that are coming in. We were talking a bit about your involvement at the gym earlier, and I'm finding every day that people are coming in are feeling more confident, more comfortable, and celebrating their own bodies in the ways that they play, participate, or compete. So I think with our membership, with people coming in as guests and others, it's a great experience for people to be part of a learning experience that promotes your healthy, active living interests.
So one thing I find with disability sport, and I hear this a lot, is kind of becomes a focal point for those with acquired injuries. It can be a very positive force in so much as they realize they can still play the game and still be part of a team, and that tends to foster strength in other aspects of their lives. Any thoughts on this?
Absolutely. I think one of the things that I learn most often is when I'm meeting someone for the first time, there's a feeling of, can I get involved or stay involved in a sport that I'm interested in? And I think pretty quickly people realize that there's opportunities, especially at Variety Village and the community, with great resources and coaching availability to make sure that you can enjoy the sports you choose, participate the way you want, and utilize adaptive equipment that will support your journey.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you, Ken.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
If you or someone you know is struggling with mental health or addiction, consider registering to the new REACT program launched by Downtown Windsor Community Collaborative. REACT is a 90-day program committed to understanding your story and supporting your journey to healthy and long-term healing. All sessions are online and completely free, running weekdays from 9 a.m. until noon. Visit reactwindsor.ca and instantly be connected to a safe and supportive community. That's reactwindsor.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Angela Richard told us a little bit about FAIR, and we got an update on Variety Village from Archie Allison. In this segment of our show, Allison Havens will be telling us a little bit about CC4C. So what can you tell me about CC4C?
Yes, so Cheyenne is Champions for Children, CC4C. Was founded in 2012 by Talia Frazier, a mom who navigated a difficult and lonely journey with her infant daughter, Cheyenne, at the time. CC4C is a family-centered organization and makes that super unique that we support, connect, and uplift children ages 0 through age 18 with rare and undiagnosed conditions, not just the rare child, but also their entire family.
So How do you go about reaching out to families who could benefit from this work?
Well, we are here to help as director of programs. I realize firsthand that often families are left on their own to navigate the social, the emotional, all of the effects that life with a rare condition, occurs in their daily life. And CC4C provides ways to walk alongside a family in their journey. Sometimes the journey to find a diagnosis, with helping support them financially to find a geneticist or genetic testing. So we help in four ways, CC4C services. The four ways we help are financial assistance and family well-being, dream teams, and uplifting trips. We have a robust website that families turn to they often find us through social media. We have a public CC4C page, and then I'm the administrator of the private family Facebook group, and we attend outreach events and collaborate with local therapy offices, children's hospitals, and we share resources on our website that share about us as well. So we serve the whole state of Texas, but some of our resources can help families all over the world that are dealing with a rare condition.
So I'd imagine that for these families, there's a large mental health strain that goes along with trying to find the right diagnosis and navigating those systems.
Definitely, and that's where our family well-being support comes into play. We connect them to peer support, other families that are going through a similar journey. We offer community resources for the entire family. We have a program called Tribe for Moms that meets monthly, and we have a Tribe for Dads that meets quarterly, and then we have Sibling Adventure Days for the siblings who often are dismissed or left out due to the rare siblings diagnosis and medical complexities. So we do offer support for each family individually, and then we do have family fun days where they can meet with other families, the entire family, and we offer family well-being in that way. But we also offer some other services definitely that help boost their morale, bring them out of isolation, and we believe that if the parents receive support through our community resources or through our events, then they're better serving their family and able to, cope with the daily challenges that a rare child can bring.
So in your time with the organization, is there any success moment or story you'd like to share that stands out for you?
Sure. We attend the National Ability Center in Park City, Utah. They have all abilities that are welcome to come and stay at their lodge and participate in activities where the family may have never experienced due to their physical limitations, financial limitations of going on a trip with the whole family. So what I'm thinking of is I attend the trips with the families. We sponsor them, so there is no expense at all for the family to attend. So we provide airfare, meals, lodging, ski lift tickets, private ski instructors for the winter trips. But being in Texas, many of our families have never experienced snow, or maybe never have had, been in snow, definitely not skiing. So I'm amazed when I go on the trips. I just returned from one about 6 weeks ago, and I just seen the children and the families as a whole interact with each other in a very safe and nurturing way where they don't have to explain their limitations, their challenges, their everything. We're all staying together, so we bond in a very special way. Even though a family might be pushing a child in a wheelchair, they are helping others with their luggage and, you know, watching over a child while the mother can actually have a chance to breathe. So one in particular, there's just so many really to share, but I can read one testimony I have right here, and they from a family that said when their insurance was declined, some of their son's specialty medications were left with another monthly bill that would make it difficult to stay on top of other medical bills and life expenses. So this dad wanted to thank CC4C for the help provided to them when they had nowhere else to go and they knew their child needed medication, for example. So that's one of many of the testimonials that we receive after funding things that maybe insurance couldn't cover that are vital to the child's well-being and medical support.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. My friends, kind of floored by Angela's interview. Fact of the matter is, there needs to be oversight, especially in group homes and care facilities. The truth is, families don't have the resources, the time, and in many cases the energy to combat any sort of injustice when it comes to this sort of care. Group homes are there to support individuals with disabilities, not to shuffle them off to the side because they might appear to be a burden to someone. Not to isolate them from their families. Certainly not to line their own pockets without providing the service that they are legally obligated to provide. We must never forget that it isn't just a 9-to-5. Sure, from the standpoint of the group home, they might be overwhelmed. They might have a long waiting list. They might have to deal with 20 clients in a day. But if that's not something they're prepared to live up to, they need to be honest. They need to hire more staff. They need to seek support from outside agencies. Something. The quality of care, the quality of service should not be allowed to suffer. Certainly the client shouldn't. While for them, it's a 9-to-5, just another day in the life. For those living in these facilities, it is their life. And they might not necessarily have the wherewithal to ask the question, why can't I be counted? Why can't I be looked upon with dignity, respect, and equality? Simply because there is one little factor that makes me different. Maybe I think a little differently. Maybe I move a little differently. See, hear, what have you. These are still human beings, entitled to dignity, respect, and consideration. And dare I say it, they're entitled to love just as much as anyone else. Isolation from family, going through all this process, it's just completely unreasonable if you ask me. Fact of the matter is, there needs to be regulation. And I'm by no means saying that every facility is guilty of this. There are those that have a real heart for this service, and I salute them. But for those that aren't, get on the stick or get out of the game. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.
Hey, do you want to make a real impact in the Black community? Join us where we connect you with Black-led organizations from all around the world. Get ready to get involved. Find the organization based on the location of interest. Follow us at supportblackcharities.org.
Hi, my name is Taku. I want to say shout out to all the Raccoons on campus. You're listening to CGSF 90.1 FM on Burnaby.
Cheese, please, yes. Cheese, please, you're so fine.
You want to listen all the time. Snuff, dude, and dapper.